Welcome to the SDA Housing Podcast, brought to you by NDIS Property Australia. Before starting this episode, we need to provide a general disclaimer. Information contained in this podcast is general in nature only. It does not take into account the objectives, financial situation, or needs of any particular person. You need to consider your financial situation and needs before making any decisions based on the information in this podcast. And you should consider seeking independent and professional advice for your personal circumstances. All right, let's begin.
Hi guys, so it's Matthew from NDIS Property Australia here, and today I have with me Kerry and John from Housing 101. Hey guys, how's it going?
Very good, thank you.
Thank you.
That's good. So just to start off, can you tell me a little bit about Housing 101 and what you guys do?
Yes, Housing 101 is a small design and construct company. If you look at our website, we do a diversity of buildings. It's more in the modular, even repurposing items. And we've, over the last few years, more through client discussions and that, we've done secondary dwellings, and secondary dwellings more for elderly clients or those who need assistance. And it's just grown from word of mouth. We've also done, and presently designing another one for affordable low-cost housings for groups. Once again, using modulars where someone may have land that they want to use for 10, 15 years, and then they may have a higher value use for that land. But at the end of the day, one of our strengths is, I believe, that we provide good aesthetics and amenities. So they don't look like modules. They look like very homely, practical, yet affordable residences.
Yeah. Can I just add that we're a small business, and we are also in partnership with Tony Long, town planner and developer. So we've got a lot of experience behind us, over 40 years. So we know what we're doing in that regard.
And I suppose that leads on from the fact we're not given a set of plans. You start with the client, maybe have to go through planning issues, discuss the logistics of what they're trying to do, and then go through the certification, which we normally do as part of the package, the design, construct, and of course then the handover. So it is an end-to-end project we prefer to do, just simply because you've got greater control of costs, and sometimes clients have headed off in a few different directions, spent a lot of money with the consultants and designers and all that, and come back to find out it's not practical or affordable. So from the beginning, we can give an indication whether we believe it can meet their needs and their budget.
Yes. Excellent. No worries. So from what I understand, you would, in that vein, I suppose it would be very much a tailored, driven to the needs of a client, very customizable based on what they require, essentially.
Correct. It's one of the interests. You know, you try to meet the outcome of the client. It's no use getting something that you don't agree with or that doesn't meet their purpose. And you know, our job records show in our case studies that we have been approached where people have sort of, in their own words, in one large project, you know, they're way off the mark. And mind you, it's always easy to criticise someone else's job when yep. it's out of, but we like to think we value add to it and do it and work collaboratively with our client all the way through, Matthew. Yeah.
Perfect. Excellent. So how long have you guys been in business in Housing 101? How long has Housing 101 been around for?
A little bit over 6 years. We've worked together with Tony Long and people who work with us for a much longer period. But you'll see prior to that, a lot of my stuff, our stuff was more commercial work, more in large village camp type operations. And we just saw a need talking to clients to specialise in a more, what we saw, niche market, but one that there was certainly a need, and that's where we steered. We people talk about accessible housing and the SDA. Our experience has been formulated many years before. We owned a large resort where for 20 years we did wheelchair, basketball, special needs groups. We actually did, probably pertinent at the moment, the Ukrainian Paralympic teams prior to the 2000 Olympics, and through direct relationships, and people use the hands-on, but we are very hands-on, we got a greater understanding of needs, and we developed our own little systems, and then gradually including the processes of AS 1428, etc. Our first official SDA one was working with, which is now ADAPT Housing, on a robust duplex up in Cairns-Smithfield, where we did a submission for a state government grant, and we were actually successful in getting that. And then, as governments then do, after we landed everything else, there is a change in direction. But it was a fairly, I think it was about four Lee Ratch files, but it certainly was a saturation into all the needs, the various categories of SDA, and especially robust for the, not only for the type and style of building, but for how it can facilitate their independence and, you know, the participants' homeliness too. So it doesn't look like an institutionalized facility is probably the word. So,
Excellent. So I suppose you guys had a lot of kind of, were you touching with areas around SDA before you went into SDA? What, I guess, when did you decide to make that move into, I suppose, starting the SDA builds?
More for just building secondary dwellings. For instance, we've actually doing a second one for the father now, but we did a secondary dwelling up at Mount Mee, where there was a son who needed some assistance in that. Story didn't want to go into a nearly corporate place, but more in a be within arm's reach of the house, but still live independently and have the facility to do so. So from that, we developed a design, and then it was interesting paralleling it with what when and this is the same time the NDIS initial specifications came out. It nearly paralleled what we're doing there, with a bit of fine tuning, and only just now completing something for the maid, the client, the father, where another family member have moved in upstairs and a self-contained unit down below. Once again, with accessibility and also influenced by a lot of livable housing guidelines.
But there have been a couple of years research into building SDA homes before we actually started. So that would have been 2 years before the Disability Expo they had last year. We was our first real attempt at going into finding our right clients, our ideal clients. And having done that, we've been continuing to develop websites to attract the right kind of people to our business.
But even with the resort and those other businesses we've had, I've always believed you've got to be flexible to adapt to changing needs. And we're about to come inside a secondary dwelling here at Beachmere, which could be easily converted because of the type of client, easily be converted to high physical support. It's got all the room sizes. It's got the ramp, the motorized wheelchair can go up and down. It is actually compliant, but being an elderly person, she doesn't have the SDA participant facilities, but she has the same needs. So.
Yeah.
So even if it's no use for her, it can then be adapted, and that's the way we look at it, that you've got to be flexible and do. So I believe our knowledge, and especially early critique when it came out, and follow the evolution of how there's been positives and negatives. But I suppose part of our drive was also seeing that it's, and maybe critique, the homes are good, but a lot of it is heading into units where they're nearly once again institutionalized and often don't need the, yeah, ours is only a small market, but the market we do see is having participants where it can be a secondary dwelling, so they can remain near their support network, being family and friends, and they're not isolated in a place that would have very good and compliant facilities. But it's always the little things that make it more livable and homely and that arrangement. And from that, we led into the idea that instead of having an SDA provider, either the family or the participant could become the SDA provider.
So, because it could be flexible like that if family members are nearby.
Yeah, and the other advantage, of course, is they're often doing support both emotionally, physically, and monetary. The SDA provider would, if they were all the participant, which is the best outcome, they become the recipient of the SDA payments. As a, they become their own SDA provider with some external administration. So the funding remains with them for their investment. So it is dependent on the family or the participant owning their own land or you know, their house where they can afford a secondary dwelling. But compared with a unit or the cost, it stacks up very well. We've been told this, you know, through all our independent research and discussions with potential clients. Yeah. So we believe we've done all the groundwork and it's like, got to have the right aesthetics and amenity. And even though they're not, we've been putting those into practice and the fact of repeat business in these secondary accessible buildings have proven that, yes, it's certainly going to be well received.
Yeah, and it gives participants that level of, I guess, choice and control, more so in where they live and who they live around.
And what we discussed earlier, sorry, Matthew, what you discussed, also their influence on the design.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, that's true as well. Yeah,
this is the plans and this is what you're getting and ticks all the boxes. But hang on, I've got a little bit of a passion here or a little desk I need there. And it can be tweaked suit. And that's the latest one we're doing, you know. While she's in a wheelchair, it's still set up for a little sewing bench here and, you know, just little spots. Yeah, so it does. And that's the goal. As we said, well, day one, they can, participant and the family can help influence the design. Yeah.
Leading on from that, you touched on it earlier. What sort of, what would be the typical clients that you work with in terms of SDA?
It would be, as we discussed, ones where there's a close family relationship where they are looking for the ideal location for the participant. It's
ideally self-funded. Our participants have to be reasonably financial to be able to afford a small secondary dwelling.
Or be able to borrow against the land.
Against or their home. Yeah. They've got to build a secondary dwelling and have the space. And we would do a site inspection to make sure everything was going to be able to, as possible. That all comes with just calling us and getting us out to have a look.
Yeah, to check the feasibility. But there has certainly been inroads into participants' funding and a lot of advice we've sort of gleaned on how to even help people achieve that goal, which is, like everyone else, own your own home.
So I suppose in terms of considerations that if people are thinking about going down this route, what are some things to be kind of aware of or consider going forward? I think you mentioned before, obviously, making sure you have your own funding and that you might, on the financial side, you might need to borrow a little bit of money. Is there anything else that someone should be aware of when they're thinking about doing this?
Well, as a secondary dwelling, excluding a large block of land, because a secondary dwelling and the payments are based on not only the house, but the land value. So a secondary dwelling, already the land is there. So that's a positive.
That's true.
Two, a lot of these, a lot of residences in the older suburbs have facility to have a secondary dwelling. And it's quite noticeable, especially in Sydney many years ago, where we did a fair bit of research, that each council is slowly relaxing the size of the secondary dwelling, the size of land it goes on. And we've had a fair bit of research on each particular shire or council on what they want. But, you know, for normal 60 square metres, and that excludes your carport and your balconies, and that is acceptable.
Well, there is a size, and they have to be aware that there is a size restriction. One second.
So that would be the main thing. They'd want to do some research to determine what can be built on there.
Well, we would do that for our clients. We do a lot. We do all of this. It's a one-stop shop. They call us.
Yep.
We've got a block of land. We're thinking of putting a secondary dwelling on it. How can I go about that? And then we do the research. We can, look at their block, have a photo of their block, visit their block, look at their council regulations and advise them. And we're quite happy to do that.
And yeah, the initial meeting will basically determine, yes, that's possible there, and then develop, in most cases, develop a few options, and then you go from there. So that's all an initial get to know your free service arrangement, I suppose, because it's no use us thinking, yes, that can happen when it can't, or them thinking it can happen with what we're proposing and it can't.
Yep.
So We've just finishing a job up at Dibra where the secondary dwelling can be as large as 100 square metres. And the client approached us because they'd been knocked back through some planning issues. And if you know the bylaws, you can have a look at it and approach it. So we did get approval for it, and it's just under, I think it's about 98 square metres. But anything new, as I think most people are finding, there's always challenges with anything new. There's always, and be fair, councils, anything out of the ordinary these days is that goes in the risk pile. And it does have to be worked through and challenged and all that. And when I mentioned the word transportables, people, and I just had a recent one here at a school where, oh, it's got to go to A and A being aesthetics and amenity. And I said, well, yes, they're transportables, but that's what it looks like at the end of the day. No one can recognise it as a transportable. Mm. It's there. And the advantage is, yes, it's transportable, but needs change in 15 years' time, which on our website you'll see we've done a few schools. We've shifted some buildings three times. It's much more environmentally friendly to use the same building and then reuse it or recycle it then knock it down and demolition. You know, so the carbon footprints there, yep. That's another thing we're fairly strong on. We did a large job up at Kiwana, which is recently housing 84 homeless people. Now, that was all made up at transportables. But to the eye, it doesn't look as if it's transportable. So we do that on some lots. It saves money for the client. It also saves time that, you know, you're not working in someone's backyard for a long period of time. But at the end of the day, it meets their needs, and it is a product that very much does not, it looks like part of the things. You adapt to the existing type of house, you may extend to it, you just can't be looking as if it's plonked there. So that's something strong.
The client also has to be aware of the fact that our designs are based around size, and that we can't build, you know, huge buildings. They have to understand there's restriction on size and shape and for our business going forward. Yep. And you need to be able to transport them, so they've got to fit on the truck. But once the building is on site, we can then make adaptations to the building to suit them. We can push walls out, this sort of thing, to make it exactly what they want.
Which we do to meet the NDIS criteria. You know, especially it's you know,
oh yeah, well, it's a
certain distance around beds and you know, your showers and bathrooms, they're all got to be compliant.
Don't limit themselves in their thinking.
But maybe there's a core module where there's push outs in various directions that on site builds that make it look like a great building and ties in. So our website shows some examples we've done of that, and they're all transportables. Most of them are hybrid, you know. The core to get it in there, build there, is 75%, and then the balance is on-site build to embellish it and meet the requirements. Yeah.
So I suppose you've touched on a few of these points before. What makes you guys, I suppose, different in the market compared to, say, someone else who's doing this, if you're aware of anyone that else is doing this?
Sometimes it gets me in trouble, Matthew, the solving problems that no one else thinks they can solve. When I say it's the challenge of meeting a need that often hasn't been met or fine-tuning things. So it is belief in the project. It is belief in trying to achieve the needs of the clients, as opposed to and there's numerous designs around, but this is A, B, C, or D, or E. It is personalising it and getting to know the client, you know, taking them on the journey. You know, the greatest joy, and to me, it's a hospitality business in many ways. It used to be, you know, a resort. The greatest pleasure was seeing people sit on the balcony enjoying themselves.
What? You need to say.
That's what you sit down to a chair. Yeah.
It's a key factor.
It is.
One-stop shop.
Yeah.
They can come to us with any problem, and we can solve it, really.
Yeah.
Excellent. We touched on a bit in terms of size. What don't you guys build? What do you prefer to build?
We don't do any conventional building. You know, years ago, I was a quarry surveyor in early life and, you know, conventional building, but here's a set of plans and the architects and engineers and you can't have much input to make it buildable. The same way with a conventional residence, there are companies that are set up that it is really a cookie cutter approach, which is great. Yep. Makes it more affordable. There's no interest or challenge in that, to be honest. It's I keep getting back to website and people will look at it and say, oh, that's different, that's different. So that is what we like to do. You know, it's people have come and said, well, what about this? And I said, no, you know. But, you know, tomorrow I'm up at Mullaney with a community group looking to do sections, and next week it's doing workers accommodation somewhere else on an affordable thing for 10 years to look at it, coming up with solutions. So that's what excites us, and as does the secondary dwelling. That is the focus really coming in the future years, meeting needs of those in need who may have SD accommodation, but it doesn't particularly, you know.
They need that certain niche kind of situation.
Yeah, for the participant and their family too.
Yes.
So yep. we can easily work remotely as well because of that product.
Yep.
We regional Australia, with known Queensland. We are Queensland based. But
that's a valid point. You'll see on our website we built a 447 person village out at Wandowin, which we're still doing little stuff on. That was a fair while back. Mm. So remoteness and the skills of building remote to control costs, and also control future maintenance. You know, that's the other advantage that, you know, you in a where you can get access to maintenance men, but a lot of these places, it's very expensive. So that's another thing you take into calculation. So every site is different. Every single site is different. Every client's different. Every climate zone's different. And they all need that special attention, I believe, to make a unique product.
So are you guys purely based in Queensland? You only build in Queensland?
Yep. Yeah, we've only got a license for Queensland, and we have been approached, but we
can't guarantee the build at the other end is our problem.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Yep. I can imagine. How can we refer clients to you and to help with your business and obviously to facilitate their needs? How do people generally reach out to you and get involved?
Well, we did spend a lot of time and effort into our website. There's a form on the website they can easily
fill.
Also, just pick up the phone, just call a number. It's my number, and I will quickly give you to John, who is the expert in these things. But I'm just there to facilitate ease of contact. Once John has people's information, there's a phone call. Often, he requires information about the block. Photos or you know, a visit to the site, but basically it's just call.
Yeah.
We do prefer people call us at the beginning of their journey, so that we can assess whether or not we can help them. If we can't, we're quite happy to say that as well, because it doesn't suit everybody what we offer.
Yeah, of course. Yep.
And sometimes the building regulations mean that we can't put a secondary dwelling on their property, and that's the first problem they have: can we do this or not? So if we can get people at the beginning of their journey, that's always very helpful. Instead of coming to us with their plan that they want a builder to build, we're not that sort of builder. We're the builder who listens to the client and gives them the solution that is also affordable, and that's how we differ.
We don't disregard their plan if they've spent a lot of time getting it right. And the one at Beachmere is the classical example. We got all the in-family computer stuff and isometrics and perspectives and you name it, and dedicatedly went through that, you know, well, that may suit now, but that won't suit 2 years' time and all this, and here's a much more affordable solution and all that. And they'd actually been to other builders and got prices and sort of. So our up-to-date has just been word of mouth. Someone said, oh, you know, go and have a chat to them, and that's how it came about. So it's certainly, you know, you don't throw out, you know, if there's been a lot of plan and thoughts, someone like, it's on the right track.
Put them into our building.
And you're trying to adapt. But if it's just a conventional, be honest, bricks and mortar operation, a conventional builder where, you know, they can just follow the instructions is more suited to it and really not of our interest as such, yeah.
Well, thanks so much to you guys for joining me. And sharing with me a little bit more about Housing 101. If people are interested, they can go on your website, give you guys a call. Thanks, guys, for listening in.
All right.
We'll see you next time on the next episode.
All right.
Thanks.
Appreciate your interest.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. To learn more about Housing 101, please visit the link in the description. If you have any other topics you would like us to cover, please email us. Thanks. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure you are subscribed and following us so you can keep in the loop with all of our upcoming episodes. We would really appreciate it if you could leave us a 5-star rating, a written review, and to share this podcast with those that could benefit. Until next time, catch you on the next episode.